Welcome to the Dry Bar Comedy Podcast, folks. As usual, it's Taylor Nielsen, and what we got over here?
Who in the? I'm sorry, I'm not Jordan Macon, but I'm Steve.
Steve Solberg.
Yeah, that's my last name.
I do my research.
I forgot to do. Yeah, thank you.
Yeah,
thank you for researching.
So you're not. Will you explain to the audience
Republican?
What you're doing here?
Is that
you're,
what
not,
you just
you're not Republican.
No, independent. Okay,
good, first. But you're also not replacing Jordan Macon. What are you doing here today, Steve?
Oh, what am I doing here? I don't know. Yeah, I'm not replacing. I'm just here because I'm a big fan of who we're talking with today. And so I said,
so you're
look,
filling in and...
I killed Jordan. And and they were like, who can do this last minute? I was like, oh, I guess I'd be available to fill in.
Yeah.
Yeah. After cleaning up the murder.
There you go. Well, and I want to say it was worth it, given the guests that we had.
It was worth it. Yeah, yeah. I will miss Jordan severely. He was a good friend.
We'll reanimate him for the next podcast.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not impossible.
No. It's 2024. There's a lot of medical technology. We are currently growing him in a lab, I think.
We won't. Regenerating.
No belly button.
No, which
yeah.
might be a disappointment to you, Jordan Macon fans out there, because that was one of his best features.
I loved his belly button. Yeah. Oh, boy. That was a weird thing.
I like it. A good segue into what we're talking about today. Not really.
No. But it's we'll use it.
We'll use it. We'll take it. Let's go ahead and see our clip to see who our guest is today.
When the kids were really young, they didn't want to sleep, and I thought they weren't getting enough physical activity, like enough exercise. I thought, oh, they're just not tired. So I started doing this thing when they were younger. I'd take them to the park every day, and I'd just run them around in circles until they were exhausted. And then we would go home, and they would go to sleep. And that was working brilliantly for the first few weeks until I realized, no, I'm just building up their cardio. Yeah, that was a terrible strategy. All that did was increase their speed and stamina. I don't know what I was thinking. I should have been giving them cigarettes and Happy Meals. Yeah, that'd slow them down. We know that works. That's data-driven, right? A little heart disease, a little diabetes, that'll tucker them right out. Obviously, I'm joking. I love my kids. I would never give them McDonald's. Or cigarettes. They don't want cigarettes. Vapes. That's what the kids want these days. The vapes, I think. I don't know. I would never.
All right, folks. You know who it is. He's got two great Dry Bar specials. Wait for it. And upgraded. Give it up for Tyler Bowe.
All right.
Hey.
You're on.
I'm happy to be here, alive and well.
Yeah.
Thank you for coming.
Sorry, all the murder talk. Yeah.
Yeah. That's just starting out on a light note.
That was not planned.
There's actually been a theory that Jordan has, after the success of his Dry Bar specials, taken off, disappeared. So the Jordan that you've seen on this podcast was an AI version. So, you know, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Now, being the man that ended Jordan, would you can actually.
If,
tell
it,
us if that's
if it's
true,
an AI,
what do you think?
You know, I think it's probably not. Yeah.
Right. Well, thanks for coming by. It's awesome to have you. You're in town to do a Dry Bar encore show.
Yes, this is off the record, just live performance, two shows.
Cool.
Which has to be a lot. Is it? I think it's more fun. Just performing versus recording. I don't know. Maybe you like a preference.
There's an excitement to the recording for sure, and it feels there's some importance to it. But it's a little more less pressure. You can be a little more silly, cut loose. But I realized I do something a lot of times when I have high pressure shows. I don't know if this is a great tactic. If there's other comics listening, younger comics, I don't know if this is the best approach. But a lot of times when I have a really big show, I will throw out like a brand new joke just to kind of keep myself on my toes or something, I think.
Do you do it on you do it on purpose?
My first dry bar special, I threw like a brand new joke in there, and like I did a show recently up in Portland at the Newmark Theater. I was opening for Roy Wood Jr.
I saw that. That was huge.
And you know, you're like, oh, so I think there's a tendency sometimes to get so in your head about like, you know, your set, and it's got to be so dialed. And then so sometimes I'll just be like, you know what, let me just throw out this brand new thing, and maybe it'll hit, maybe it won't. Yeah. But it makes you focus on that bit maybe more than like being caught up
stressed
in
on all the other. Yeah.
Oh, interesting. And then if that bit kind of lands, then you're like feeling good for the rest of the show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
I like that. I think new material makes me happy. Like
there's an excitement about it, and yeah, you're like, you know, it's the tightrope.
I love the risk. Yeah.
Yeah.
No net. That's very much operating without a net situation. Yeah.
You also, I feel like I tend to sell those bits really hard because you're like, I hope this works. And then,
yeah,
you know.
I like it. You going to use that, Steve?
No.
Play it safe.
Yeah.
Just keep
it. Well, I love that. I love that bit. It sounds like you got your parenting tactics really dialed in there. You got some secret hacks that maybe we could share on the podcast. You got any other little morsels of wisdom for the new parents out there?
Oh man, I'm just learning as I go. I'm trying to do the best I can. I feel like I had good examples in my parents, so I'm trying to take the best of what they did and then learn some of the new stuff. I don't know. I have fun with it. I think the biggest skill that any parent really needs is patience. Like that's on a serious note, that's like the most critical thing. If I could look back, you got to learn how to be patient, but just also have fun with it. Like I talk about, like, when I make the kids lunches, I cut all the crust off their sandwiches like the way they like them Monday through Thursday, but then on Fridays I just hit them with all the crusts. yeah. Parents, don't throw those crusts out. Save them. That's good bread, especially in this economy right now.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? Yeah. I mean, stretch that bread dollar a little bit.
Sure, yeah.
And then this is another thing that the kids a lot of times, they don't like the crust, but they also don't like the butt ends of the bread. I don't, what do you call it?
Oh, yeah.
I call it the butt of the bread.
The butt. Some people call it the heel. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
But the two ends of the bread, I feel like dads, like, that's always a big sacrifice move as a dad. Sometimes you're like, I'm going to take this for the family. And then you make the sandwich just out of those two pieces.
Uh-huh.
You really feel like you're doing something.
That is a huge sacrifice.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're a martyr.
For sure. You know, that's a father's role, is to be as a protector. You know what I mean? And protect your family from having to eat those dry ends. But if you need to utilize them, a lot of people haven't. You just take the butt ends, you flip them around, you put the peanut butter and the jelly or whatever on the backside, then you put those two ends together. So on the outside, it looks like good bread.
Yeah.
But you can get away with this when the kids are little, because they see the white fluffy part and they're like, oh, this is. But when they get a little older, they'll take a bite and they'll be like, They'll go, oh.
They're like, what's going on in my today, sandwich? Dad.
Not today. You got me.
That's a genius move, though.
Yeah. That's great.
You can get away with it for a good couple of years.
I think that's why is my brain not able to think? Just go like that. Like, for some reason.
Well, yeah. We can't trick yourself, though, is the problem.
Yeah.
Unless, yeah, you don't really have that object permanence thing.
I don't. Yeah.
Sometimes I wish I didn't.
Yeah, maybe with grilled cheese.
Yeah. I think it's just one of those things that's like hiding in plain sight. Once you see it, you go, oh, yeah, you could do that.
Duh.
Yeah. That's awesome. That's awesome. That reminds me, my mom growing up would pack me lunches. So that, first off, thank you for that, Mom. But she would do this thing where she would freeze a ton of sandwiches.
Oh.
And it would be like a roll with Canadian bacon in the middle, or ham, right? And it would, and she would just have a bunch of these frozen sandwiches she would just throw in my backpack each day, and I would never eat them. So there would be like, at the end of the week, seven, you know.
Why wouldn't you eat them?
Because they were like partially frozen.
I was going to say, were they thawed by lunch?
Not really. If I took a late lunch, maybe. And I never really liked
it. You can't take a late lunch in elementary school.
You're coming home every day from school. Hey, Mom, thanks for the apple and the carrot sticks. They stay really cold thanks to these ice block sandwiches.
Frozen ham.
That I'm unable to eat.
Yeah, I thought it was just to keep everything cold.
Yeah, that was pre-ice pack era. Just.
So that was a hack my mom used just to kind of streamline the lunch process.
Yeah, I can see that as the cooling of a sandwich
makes it hard. You know, the trading game was always big at with the brown bag lunch. Mm. You know, you're like trading fruit snacks for the Cheeto bag or whatever.
Exactly.
I imagine that you probably didn't get top value for the frozen ham and cheese.
No, I was sort of the bottom of the economy as far in the
you're in the back talking to the lunch lady like, you got a microwave or something?
Yeah.
Did you ever smack it on the table to get a laugh?
Just yeah, no.
Like, how's your sandwich?
Maybe used it as a weapon.
Oh,
in certain food fights. Cases. Yeah. But no, I was bad about disposing of stuff in my like from lunch in general. So there was just a bunch of stuff in my backpack that I just
Taylor threw a rock. It was a ham sandwich.
No, it's not a rock. It tastes like a rock.
It was delicious.
It's delicious.
Given time.
Yeah. Well, I really enjoy that bit. How old are your kids?
They're now 11 and 8.
Wow.
So yeah, time flies and they're getting big, and it's just like every step, it's, you know, once you get these little eras where you think you're like, oh, I got this handled. I know how to parent an 8-year-old. And then as soon as you start to get a handle on that, then they throw you like something changes. They hit like a new stage of development
and then
you're learning how to parent a 9-year-old or a 10-year-old.
Are you feeling like you're figuring it out with the 11-year-old, and then you're able to use that, what you learned on the younger sibling?
Absolutely not.
No. Are they just that different? Or?
Yeah, I can only imagine like every kid. That's what's so mind-boggling as a parent, because you're like, I'm talking to my wife like, okay, like arguably we're parenting these kids the same way,
right?
Like as far as our, you know, our kind of house rules and how we approach, but they're so different, but that's just their personality. Yeah. So you got to parent, you know, I got to parent my son a little different than I got to parent my daughter, because they're just different people. And yeah, but it's fun. It's like a never ending puzzle.
Well, Tyler, so you're from Oregon, Washington?
Portland, Oregon.
Portland, Oregon.
Born and raised. I bounced around a little bit. Moved to Boston in 2006 and was there from like 2006 to 2011. My wife was going to grad school and we stayed a little extra. And then we moved out to LA. I was in Burbank for like 5 years and then moved back to Portland. So bounced around a bit.
Oh, cool. Cool.
So picked up a little East Coast. Got to experience some East Coast winters and summers and all that. And then... And then L.A., the land of sun and traffic.
Yeah, yeah. I'm actually from Battleground, Washington.
Oh, you're originally. Super close.
Get out of here.
Yeah, did That's, you?
I didn't know that. Wait, maybe I did.
You, well, you're from Washington.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Whoa.
Yeah.
This just happened by accident.
PNW.
Yeah, a bunch of Pacific Northwest brethren.
We are all kind of wearing a similar, we got a similar thing going
this
on.
This is a very Pacific Northwest-y look, like... Earthy tones, everybody's, we're, that's
interesting.
It.
Interesting. I was wondering. And nobody. Even the shoes. Even the shoes.
Unshaved faces. Yeah. That's Pacific Northwest.
Oh, wow. I'm just not, it's kind of freaking me out. Now.
That is weird.
You guys, how new is the beard? Or is this like a long
Mine's
time?
Mine's newer.
Look?
Not, I mean, not that new, but only a few years.
Pretty much, probably I've had a beard, I kind of, just grow it out and shave it. But I've had beer for the last 3 years probably.
Okay.
Consistently.
Pandemic thing.
Yeah, pandemic.
Yeah.
I never even tried before that.
Really?
I never tried. And then pandemic hit and now you're like, I think we all, I don't know if we were trying or we were not trying, but you're like, this is happening.
Yeah,
for sure.
But now, every now and then I'll sort of threatened to shave it and my wife's like, don't, Very plainly.
Probably
too,
don't.
Which is, yeah, which yeah. Is, I'm like, oh, do you, are you, are, she's like, but you could like grow it back, right? And I love her and I want to keep her. So,
because then you could do one of those videos of your kids reacting to it.
That's what's crazy is my kids are young enough that like it's a newer thing. Like right. It took, no joke, probably a year or two where I would look in the mirror and I wouldn't be like, who's that?
Yeah.
Now I look and it feels normal, but I've got photos from pre-beard and my kids will be like, oh, like that was so long ago. You didn't even have a beard. And I'm like, that's most of my life. So it's, I think they would, if I shaved it and I like came home this weekend with no beard, they'd be like, what?
So you haven't shaved it since you grew it out after COVID?
Or? No.
Wow.
I've trimmed it down. When I first grew it, I did kind of I let the chin go long, so it was kind of long, which was weird. And then at one point I trimmed the sides real short and kind of had, I was kind of thinking like, what do they call it? Like the Van Dyke where you have like the thick mustache and then the chin beard. But I kind of looked like Cholo gangster. I don't know if like, you know, yeah.
If you're doing too much.
Yeah.
I always go short. I always keep it pretty short. Cause I don't know too long. I get scared.
Yeah.
Mine doesn't grow. It starts to be like
scraggly.
You're like, all right, that's gross.
Yeah.
Well, when I shave mine, cause I've shaved it a few times. And my mouth just looks so tiny without the beard.
I didn't expect you to say that.
No, you've never heard this?
What? I'm looking at your mouth.
I've at least talked to one person about this where they shave their beard and then they're like, where'd my mouth go?
Oh, interesting.
It's like, yeah. So I never thought I had a small mouth until I shaved after having a beard and it's like,
you go, dang it.
For most guys, I have never heard that. For most guys, it's like, they're like, oh, my jawline and my chin are
that is gone too. So you add that to the, with the no mouth syndrome.
You go to a dentist, do you find them saying?
They're searching.
Are they like, it's so roomy in here with the beard.
Yeah, with the beard, your mouth is great. But man, please don't shave before your appointment. Otherwise, I can't find it.
Man, I hope it's just like a forced perspective type thing.
And yeah. Not,
it actually does shrink.
A little bit.
That would freak me out.
Could you please open a little wider?
No.
And get
I can't.
One...
It's a condition.
I shaved.
I'll come back after five.
Yeah. But, well, that's interesting. Beard. All Pacific Northwest guys, beards, collared shirts. I also feel like there was a moment where I think I kind of was looking at both of you and I was like, I feel like there's something familiar or there's with like either way we were dressed or maybe something. And then when we acknowledged it, I was like, oh yeah, that is what it is. I sensed that. Do we all have the same color eyes too? No, we don't.
No,
we're getting back into conspiracy theory.
Tyler's got those.
Do we all
blues.
Have we're small mouths too when we shave?
We're yeah,
all the same.
Small mouths.
Super tiny mouth. Yeah.
So, did you start comedy in Portland then?
I did. I started and was. I got my start there just for a couple of years, and then moved to Boston. So it was interesting when I started, I made, I think, a lot of growth and progress in my years in Boston. I loved the scene there. And so then I would get out and I'd be working clubs and traveling around and people would be like, oh, you're a Boston guy. And I never felt comfortable claiming that because Boston, like people in Boston are like,
yeah,
you know,
yeah,
they're very like,
you hear it in their
to
voice.
Their neighborhoods too. Like, where are you from? South? Are you from the North End? Like, where are you from? Like,
yeah.
I lived in Charlestown, but I'm not from Charlestown. Sure. So it was weird when there was a lot of comics and other comedians that knew me as like a Boston guy. And
right.
I was like, I'd always be like, Portland. And then when I moved from Portland to Boston, I always like forgot about Portland, Maine. So people would go, where are you from? And I'd go, Portland. And I'd go, Oregon, because they'd cut them off before they'd say Portland, Maine, and I'm like, no, the real Portland. But
right. The yeah.
Yeah, the real, I don't know, you know.
The populated one.
Yeah, but.
Yeah. I used to tell people I was from Washington, and they would say, I swear, they would go, oh, D.C., the state's capital.
Yeah.
Very, or the, not the state, the country. The country's capital. Very yeah. cool. It's like, I was always a little bit hurt by that.
Yeah, you can't. Anywhere outside the U.S., if you say Washington, they go, I don't know.
Well, that's, I just realized this. I never really thought about that. But that's how, I think, why so frequently people say Washington State.
Yes.
They'll be like, I'm from Washington State.
Yeah. To
differentiate between Washington, D.C. But nobody goes, I'm from Iowa State.
Yeah. I'm from Delaware like, State.
That sounds
yeah.
like a college at that point. And not a...
Steve Solberg, Delaware State. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Here's a...
That's weird.
You asked me about hot takes before we...
Sure, sure.
I don't know if this is a hot take or just a confession. Of all of the states, I frequently forget that West Virginia is a state. I think it's the most forgettable state. And if you're from West Virginia, I apologize and I'm sorry. Yeah. I just feel that all the other twin states, that's what I call them.
Yeah.
The twin, like, it's, there's a counterpart, North Dakota, South Dakota, North Carolina, South Carolina. And then West Virginia, like Virginia's just yeah. like, I'm the real Virginia. It's not East Virginia. It's yeah. just, it's Virginia. And then West Virginia's like, hey.
We're weird.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know. I wonder if West Virginia was at any point was ever like, hey, Virginia, like, maybe, could you maybe like put a East like on the front? Like we could be, and Virginia's like, nah.
We want to be the OG.
Yeah. I mean, you can be West Virginia, but we're Virginia.
Okay.
Yeah, and I wonder if people from West Virginia have a strong sense of like state identity compared to like, oh, you're from, like they get mad if you confuse them with being actually from Virginia. They're like,
well,
West Side.
Yeah, if you live in the western part of Virginia, do people say like, oh, I live in like West Virginia, and they go West Virginia, and you go, no, sorry, the Western.
Western Virginia.
This is,
wow. It's this something has perplexed to ask.
Me for years.
West Virginians as well as New Mexicans.
Yeah.
People from New Mexico. Turns out you don't never say what I just said.
New Mexicans.
Yeah, it feels like that's wrong when I said
that.
Is that the
term for people from that?
New Mexico. New Mexico.
New Mexicans.
Yeah,
it is.
Yeah, it must be. New Mexites.
Yeah. Do people from Mexico get a little bit mad about that? They're like,
they probably should be.
Like, you think you're the upgraded version of us?
Yeah, see, that was a smart sell on New Mexico's part. Instead of saying North Mexico, they were like, let's actually call it New. But I think OG Mexico still has a lot of strength. Like, people don't, you never see a cruise ship going to New Mexico. And I think that's...
There's reasons for that, I think.
I think there's, you know, other than the landlockedness, I think it's also, there's other reasons.
Also, New Mexico, I think they tend to use high fructose corn syrup, whereas regular Mexico uses the cane sugar.
Yeah.
There you go. That's why you want to be down in real Mexico.
Is that just with the Coke? Or
no one wants a New Mexican Coke. Jeez. It's garbage.
I went to, I was in Tucson and we went to a Mexican restaurant. You'd expect great Mexican food in Tucson. And we go to this Mexican restaurant and realizing it wasn't Mexican, it was New Mexican style cuisine.
Is that what it said?
Yeah, which is sort of like Tex-Mex. You know?
Okay.
Which I'm not a big fan of Tex-Mex. Because they just make everything unnecessarily sweet, I feel like.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I prefer that
sugar
Mexican thing.
Anyway. High fructose.
There you go.
We're all getting some hot takes in here today.
Maybe like
I don't know why I snapped.
Like a lukewarm take.
Yeah, that's a lukewarm take. That was the weakest snap ever.
Yeah. That's a great hot take. I appreciate that one. You came locked and loaded with that.
The West Virginians are going to be in the comments section just like, yeah.
Blowing it up. That's too funny. So you're talking about being on the road for when you were in Boston, based out of Boston, being on the road. Is there any like worst gig or craziest show that you can remember from that era, or past it?
The worst gig that I ever did, and I feel like I've probably told this story before on a podcast because it's a frequently asked question. I did a show in Dickinson, North Dakota. I was working with a buddy, Keith Nelson, who is one of my longest comedy buddies. He was headlining, I was featuring, and we did this show in this bar, and it was probably 90% dudes that had just come off like the oil fields. Roughneck, you know, blue collar guys. They'd come, they'd get off work and they'd go to this bar and they would start drinking, and they didn't start the show. It was like a late show. It started at like, I don't know, 9 or 10, but I feel like everyone in the audience had been there drinking since probably 5. So they're primed and ready to go. And I knew it was a rowdy room coming in. I go up, as soon as I get on stage, the cocktail server comes up with like 3 shots. Of the three, what's
to
called
you?
The three wise men, right? Jim Beam, Jack Daniels, and Jose Cuervo.
Oh, wow.
And they're like, shots, shots, shots. Like, they're peer pressuring me.
These
and
are the
like,
oil men.
Yes. Yeah. And I was like, I got to do 35 minutes. This was like back, I think this was a triple gig, maybe. I don't know.
Oh, man.
But it's like just 2 comics. Opener does 35. A headliner does an hour. And I just, as soon as I started my set, they were just heckling and yelling. And I felt like I was in rare form. I was just firing back. I was handling all the hecklers. And but it was a very rowdy crowd. Keith gets up. He's struggling through his set. And towards the end of his set, this guy, we got to keep it clean, yells some obscenities at him and asks him to essentially shut up. And Keith talks to the guy and said, well, you know, I just have about 15 minutes left. I'm actually getting paid to talk, so I'm not going to shut up. But this girlfriend, or I don't know if it's his wife or whatever, was also not, she was talking through the whole show. And Keith was like, if you could stop talking and if she could stop talking, then I could finish. And then the guy got up and he threw his cup at Keith, but it was like a plastic cup and it didn't have any weight to it, so it didn't really go anywhere. And Keith was like, what the heck? And then the guy picks up a glass Bud Light bottle and chucked it at him. And for people that don't get on stage, the lights often are in your eyes, so you really can't see too much past the first row. So Keith didn't see this bottle till like the last second, and he kind of like turns his head and it hits him in the side of the head, and it didn't break, which was, I don't know if that's worse or better. But then Keith dropped the mic and came running off the stage, and I was coming running over from the bar because I was like, I thought it was going to be
like you had
brawl.
Benches cleared a comedy show?
Yeah.
This is amazing.
And I'm not a big dude. Do you know Keith Nelson? He's an older guy, but he's like a track and a basketball. He's like, six, seven, real lean, real thin, but he's a big dude. And this guy was like, it maybe as tall as him, but huge. And I just thought, oh, I guess we're both getting beat up. But you know, when you have a friend and you're like, if he's fighting, I'm fighting.
That's
so
amazing.
Anyway, Luckily they had security there, and the security got in front of the guy, and I kind of grabbed Keith, so it didn't come to blows. But they took the guy out. Keith finished his show, and he's like bleeding down the side of his head. And what was crazy is that I thought we were going to have to fight everybody in there, because you know, you go to these small towns and you're like, everybody knows everybody, they all work together. And it was the funniest thing. So we finished the show, Keith finishes the show like a champ, and we go to the, up to the bar afterwards, and all the other guys come up and they're like, dude, we cannot stand that guy, he's the worst. They're like, he's the foreman, but we all hate him because only reason he's a foreman is because his dad like owns the company. He's not like a real, like he didn't come up in the trenches working on the oil rigs like the rest of us. They're like, man, if he would have laid a finger on you, we would have beat the snot out of him. Nobody likes him. And Keith was like the hero of the night.
Oh my
gosh. So people were trying to buy us drinks and stuff like that. And he's like, I want a Tylenol and a Band-Aid, because he was like bleeding. But that was one of those shows where, I mean, and it wasn't even that, I didn't get beaned, but still it was crazy where you're like, oh, we probably shouldn't be throwing glass bottles at people.
That's shows. It's like the absolute vision of everybody's worst show is you had something thrown at you. because not people heckling, whatever. Yeah. But like heckling to the point where they're throwing bottles, that's insane.
Yeah. Yeah.
Also cool that you were like, yep, I'm fighting too. I don't think I've had to have that thought in my brain since like high school.
Yeah.
And so like when you said, you know how you, if they fight, you fight, I was like, yeah, I guess so. I forgot how that goes.
Yeah, I mean.
You're right. That's the right answer.
Now, I I think that I've also worked with other comics. I did a show one time that was fine for me, but was terrible for another comic. And he got into it with the audience, and they were about ready to fight him. And he kind of was looking at the other comedians like, come on, guys.
And they're like. Mm.
And yeah, and he was being awful to the crowd. So I was kind of like, whatever happens, you kind of deserve it. And
yeah.
I do think that within the world of comedy, there is a kinship, but to a degree.
Yeah.
Because like, you worked with people that are, if they're being terrible, you go, well, I don't have your back. But this was years ago.
Yeah.
Keith's a really good friend. He's one of my best, most dearest friends. So I'm not going to just watch him get into a fight and just sit at the bar. Go get him, Keith. You got this.
Give it a college try.
Yeah. Also, at this point, like I said, I thought it was going to be us against the entire room. So I thought,
and a room full of blue collar.
Oh, there cringe. There was no winning.
Those were some hard hands. Yeah.
Yeah. It was like, well.
Yeah. Wow. That's scary.
I feel like you were in Boston during for me, Boston had some years where it was like so many good comics coming out of Boston. And I like Patrice O'Neill and Gary Goldman and, Bill Burr and like, were you there during that season?
Patrice and Bill Burr had already left for New York when I got there. But yeah, there's so many amazing comics who've come out of Boston, and also just like the number. I mean, like in late night, when you think about, at one point you had Conan, Leno, Jimmy Fallon, like all these are all people who've made their way through Boston and come out of Boston. So there's a history of incredible writers and performers that have come out of that city. So just being there, you feel that. It's palpable. Yeah. Like Gary Goldman was there, and he was around when I was there, and he's one of the best. I mean, just I admire he's so funny and so thorough. Like when he's whatever he talks about, you're just like, well, that subject's done.
Yeah, for sure.
He doesn't juice. He has a whole special on cookies, right?
That's my point. Like the
cookie
thorough,
joke
like,
is one of the all time greatest. Yeah.
It's
And to me, I love people being able to make funny out of stuff that it's like, that's not that funny or whatever. And they're like, I found it, you know. I think, do you find yourself when you're looking for bits, are you trying to do that type of, because your bits seem to be, they're true to your life, but they're not, I'm like, oh, here comes Tyler with the typical, you know, men and women are different. You know, it's like you're hitting different subjects. You're talking about your kids. You're talking about the energy drinks and all this different type of, and beatboxing and doing, it's kind of a funky.
Yeah, I don't. That's toolbox. What's weird about this business or art form or whatever you want to call it is like some people seem to have a very sort of specific process, and then a lot of us are just like, I don't know. Like if you ask me, I don't even know if I – sometimes you just get an idea that sort of pops in your head, or sometimes you like, all right, I want to do – you know, I want to write a bit about bottled water. And then you start racking your brain about it, and you're like, how do I make this funny, or where's the funny in this? But like, it seems like every joke and every bit's a little, like you come about it a little bit differently. And sometimes you just sit there and you're like, all right, what's funny? But that's like not the way to think. The thing is to think about
something. That's like everything at once.
Yeah.
It's like, how do you?
Too overwhelming. Yeah. And it's like the paradox of choice. There's when you can write about anything, sometimes you just get like, it's like the overwhelm. But
yeah, for sure.
But yeah, I don't know. Sometimes you have just like these little sparks of, I mean, that's going to sound arrogant to say like little sparks of brilliance. But I just mean like sometimes something will fire and you're like, oh, like in this last special, this bit that I really enjoyed doing and working on is the bit that I have about eavesdropping. And it's one of those things that's like I've always done, and it's such a mundane. That's the thing about comedy. Like, you can talk about, you know, big hilarious, like, I don't know, things like relationships and dating and like, or like have the craziest story about the craziest night in your life.
Yeah.
Or you can do like, you can find a bit about shoelaces that people are just like, dude, that's hilarious. That's the bit. And you're like, shoelaces. It's so mundane. But this bit about eavesdropping has been fun because it's so personal. It's so true. And also, I feel like so many people it resonates with. Like, people have come up to me after show and they're like, oh my gosh, that's me. I can't shut it off. I'm always like listening to other people. They'll be like, oh my, you know, women will come up, my husband and I go out to eat to dinner, and the whole time I'm just listening to like the next table over, or like, that's what we do together as we like. And I'm like, yeah, it's just, it's really hit with people, and it's fun to see. And,
what a funny thing to do together, to be like, we're together, let's hear everyone else.
But yeah.
I get the joy of it.
Yeah, too. You're like, what do you got over there? I'm over here. These people are breaking up. What do you got over there? You're like, oh, this is like, yeah. So if you see me out and about, I'm listening. Just know that.
Yeah.
I'm going to know.
Yeah. You ever tempted to buy like a hearing aid a little prematurely and just like crank it all the way up?
I never thought about that. But that would be a problem because I'm already listening enough, and I don't know if I have standard hearing or better hearing. My eyes aren't good, so that'd be nice if I had like
better hearing.
But I think part of it's like a focus issue. It's like, I remember when I first started dating my wife, like we'd go out on dates and I'd be so aware of like, there's TVs everywhere. And ever since flat screens, like, here's a hot take. I don't love flat screens because they're so thin. They can put them anywhere, and then they do. And we don't need TVs everywhere. I don't need a TV at the gas pump.
Yeah.
There's TVs at gas pumps. And you go, why? True. And I think part of it is they just go, because we can. We'll put one here. They're cheap enough now. Like, I remember the first time I saw that, I was just like, no, not. Like, we're handling highly flammable chemicals.
Yeah.
And the last thing you want is like, maybe we should be more distracted. And then you see like YouTube videos of people getting robbed at gas pumps. You're like, you got to have your head on a swivel. Yeah. But anyway, I got so distracted right there. But if I went out with my wife, I'm like, I want to give her my attention. And then we'd be like at a bar or a restaurant. And there's like two like flat screens like behind. Like, and I'm like finding myself. I'm looking at her. But all of a sudden, my like attention's like drifting up to like everywhere. This TV over here. I don't even care what the TV, but it's there. And I'm looking at it. And then I'm like, oh, but I'm trying to focus back here. And then it's up here. And same thing with like listening is it's like, I don't know if it's that I hear any better. It's just that like it's the drift, the focus.
Yeah, no, I've got that too. I've got that too majorly. Yeah.
If a screen's, I'm going to watch it, which is stupid because it's like, I'm not even into whatever sport is on that TV.
Have either of you done improv training or done like performance improv?
Yeah.
We used to do this exercise because it's so important to listen during improv, right? Yeah. To listen to your other players. And we used to do this listening exercise where you'd sit down and you'd have two other people on either side of you tell a story at the same time.
Yeah.
And then for like a minute. And then after they stopped, you would say to each person, you say, this is the story you told. And you try to tell it back to them. And then you try to tell this person back. So it trains you to like listen. And that was one of those things. I was like always good at that. And that's what I end up doing is like once like, you know, these people over here are start talking, all of a sudden like I hone in on that and I'm still trying to pay attention. But I'm like, I can listen over here too. I'm picking up all the story.
Wow.
I don't know.
That's an insane talent to be able to hear two stories and process them both. Maybe that's a comedian thing. I don't know. Yeah. I know you have to think about two things at once usually when you're doing a show.
Yeah, it's probably not great. I don't know.
Do you find that translates to your life? Like you need multiple things going on and to maintain your attention?
No. I think I'm the opposite. Like I don't like to multitask, and I don't even believe in it. I say this all the time. Like, you should do, if you're doing something, you should be focused on that. Be present. Yeah. Like, give your attention to that thing. And I mean, for a lot of reasons, one, so you can focus on it and do it well, but like also from like, not to get like, you know, woo woo, but like try to be present in the moment. So mm-hmm. if you're, you know, if I'm doing dishes, I try to just be doing those dishes and not be like, I don't know. I feel like they've shown that if you're trying to do multiple things at once, you're not really doing two things at once. Usually you're like just oscillating back and forth between, you know, you're doing a little of this, a little of this, a little of this, a little of this. It's like, no, I like to be focused and on one thing at a time.
Well, going back to you brought up one of his bits, the beatboxing thing. I'm very curious. Is that a skill that you had pre-comedy that you were able to work into your
end? Yeah, absolutely. So that came about from, well, I started beatboxing in like in probably like early high school. I grew up with, I loved hip hop and rap music, and I had buddies that like were aspiring rappers, and a couple of them went so far as to like put out some albums and like go tour and do gigs and stuff like that, and are pretty talented. So when we were younger, like we would freestyle and just like at recess and at lunch, and a lot of times I would beatbox and they would rap, and they were trying to be legitimate rappers. I would just like do corny raps, you know, like
that was the best.
But you know, it was fun. And then it was just something I would do, you know, like walking to school. Did you ever like, oh, I wish I could have like a soundtrack to my life, like in a movies or TVs, the guys walking down the streets, like, you're like, I want that. Uh-huh. But I would just like do that on the way to school, like make my own little soundtrack. Yeah, like, you know, like, it's like, oh, something's about to happen.
This is exciting.
Yeah, we're picking up the pace or whatever. So I would just beatbox constantly. And then when I got to college, I was doing theater and improv stuff, but I also got in this a cappella group, and I am a okay singer, but not like a soloist. I don't have an incredible voice, but I could beatbox. So I wanted to get involved in some more activities. So I went and auditioned for this a cappella group, and I did my vocal audition, and they were like, okay, like they ran me through some scales, and they were like, you know, played multiple notes, and they're like, can you find the harmony? And you know, I can kind of workably do that. But then they were like, is there anything else you want to show us? And I could tell they weren't like super impressed.
Right.
They were like, okay, well, is there anything else that you want to? And I was like,
oh,
I was
like this.
Yeah. I was like, there is a like, and then they were just like, I just did like this beatbox, like a little showcase of a bunch of different beats, and they were just like, huh. And it was, they were like, so they like took a quick second. They're like, do you want to be in the group?
Wow.
And then I was like, yeah. And then that was it. And it was the funniest thing, because that was the audition I was at. And then there was a bunch of guys like waiting outside the room. And then they were like, you want to be in the group? And I was like, yeah. And they're like, cool, sit down. And then the next guy comes in the room, and I could tell he was like,
how come he's still here?
Yeah, he's like, that's what happened? Awesome. I was like, I'm in the group now. I get a vote.
Holy cow.
Yeah.
And they sweet. Were, did you ask questions then? Like,
oh, I had so many questions. Oh, well,
like when you were the, you like, yeah, you on the other control. Side of the table.
I think I was a little bit more like kind of hanging back. Cause initially it was like five guys. And then that was like the first year. That's a pretty small a cappella group, is five.
Yeah.
So we expanded to, I think the first year it was maybe 10 or maybe 9. That was like sort of the first formation. Because then you got like two people singing per part, maybe a soloist, and then beatbox. So, yeah. But yeah, so I had the beatboxing. As soon as I started doing stand-up, it was one of those things where I was like, all right, how can I take this other skill set that's fun and I enjoy doing? How can I bring this into stand-up?
Yeah. Yeah.
And that was interesting, because I feel like since I did theater and I improv, like I kind of got out of the gates pretty fast doing stand up, and you asked before the like podcast, like what was your first joke? So this wasn't my first joke, but it was one of the first bits that I wrote was this beatboxing bit, which I won't get into all the details of it because it's maybe a little dirtier. it's just like sound, this sort of how the sounds play out of getting it on with somebody and the rhythmic nature of sure. that. But it was one of the first like bits that I wrote, and it kind of grew into this like basically became my closer, and it was this huge. It was the first bit that showcased beatboxing, and it was the weirdest thing. Like I had one of the first bits that I wrote was this big closing bit that became like my closer, and to have that so early on in my career. Was fun, but also there was some comics coming up that were like, oh, that's all you have is that bit. And
they're jealous.
I mean, I think that just like, you know how the comedy, it's like everybody's running at a different pace.
Yeah, absolutely.
And some people start out real fast and some people it's like the slow build. So I think there's a lot of that in any comedy scene. There's people that, you know, get opportunities early on or some people that have like early success and some, it's tough for other people to see that.
Do you think that you could give Steve and I the basics of beatboxing? Could you give us a level one?
Oh man. When I learned, I was like, I was emulating like the old school, like the Fat Boys, like the, like all of, like it's like hella heavy breathing and stuff. But then now, did y'all ever see the Boots and Cats video?
That got real popular.
Somebody, basically they were like, how do I take words and like the Boots and Cats and turn that into.
Yeah.
So there's some instructional videos out there that are pretty good, but I don't know. When I've taught other, because I've done some acapella workshops, I always think of like different drum kits. Like you have, because like the Fat Boys, like that old school beatbox, that doesn't sound like drums. I don't think it's meant, right? Like that doesn't sound like a drum. Whereas like that sounds more like a kick drum. So I think of different kits. Like there's like the, like if you have like different, like a beat machine, like an old school beat machine, or like a drum kit would be like,
yeah,
like that sounds a little bit more like drums, or like you can do like, like doesn't sound really like a snare, but so there's like different. Yeah. So like that's one kit, which is different than like.
You want to give it a shot?
I can tell that my mouth. I feel like I just shaved. Like I have a tiny mouth now.
Yeah,
that could maybe help.
I don't know. But while I'm watching your mouth, and it seems like you have face muscles that have gotten used to.
Oh, yeah.
There's some mouthful dexterity that you have to like build up, and then breath control too, especially if you're going to do it for a long time. But I always thought, so because I used to break dance too. I was deep in the hip hop game.
Wow.
In the world of hip hop. But I always felt like break dancing and beatboxing are two things that where the learning curve is very, it's like a slow, long, like people would get started and I'd tell them, don't let anyone see you do this for a long time. Like breakdancing.
Oh, really?
Because it takes sometimes you see somebody just like rolling around on the floor and they're like, I'm breakdancing. And you're like, are you though?
I remember doing that as a kid.
It's one of those things that you want to practice for a long time till you get good before you really showcase it. Same thing with beatboxing, because if you don't get like workably decent, then you sound like you're just making like fart noises.
Yeah, sure.
There's a fine line between
An asthma attack.
Exactly. There's a lot of other things that beatboxing can sound like before it sounds like an actual
beatboxing
enjoyable noise.
Yeah. Like, oh, that's a good beat. Yeah. There's so much stuff now that they're insane where they're doing laser sounds
The stuff that the true like pure beatboxers, they're on a different level. I did a show in Hawaii and on the show booked this kid Pono, who is, I don't know, this was a couple years ago, he was the world beatboxing champion.
Oh my gosh.
Very talented and unbelievable. And they had him open up the show and he did a bunch of different things like beatbox songs and like showcasing his different skills. And then before I did my set, they brought me up on stage and they were like, why don't you battle? And I was like, let's not. I mean, battle. We could.
Yeah, that's so
rude. How
about
a little jam session? Like, right. I mean, he would have just, I mean, he's the king of the world. So we just kind of did like a little collab. It was fun. But yeah, the stuff that he's doing is like, I think if it's like start basic and then just you got to build. Like first get like a kick and a snare.
Get a couple sounds.
Get the rhythm going and then try to work in more sounds. And that's what's crazy about this other, like this professional guys. They're doing like 37 sounds at the same time.
Yeah, how do they? Can you do two sounds at once?
Yeah, well, yeah, I mean, there's like...
I mean, yeah, yeah. Go ahead, sorry. I interrupted.
No, it just depends on like, I'm trying to, because like there's people that can like rap and beatbox at the same time. Or, like, you know, you can hum.
You're humming and...
Yeah. The throat buzz thing, that was like a big one, like the like that thing. But that's like, Rozell was doing that. He was like one of the first guys. I was like, oh, that's amazing. I got to figure out how to do that.
It's kind of wild.
Yeah. I think I just, that's not it. Oh, there it is.
It's kind of like the throat. All right. This is where you lay down the freestyle.
Steve. Yeah.
Okay.
Hit it. Like, no, I don't want to hit it.
Big swallow.
You want to hit it? You can hit it.
You should hit it. You want to?
I'll hit it if you hit it.
Oh, okay. Here goes.
Okay. Can you give us a beat for a freestyle rap about the podcast?
Should we just, let's just go like a slow.
Slow.
Because yeah. Let's just go.
Sitting in the room doing podcasting with Taylor and Tyler. Everything's flowing. Feeling kind of dumb because I don't know what to say, but that's okay because now it's your turn.
Beat's good. Maybe gonna nod. Here we are on the Dry Bar Pod. Here we go, here we go, here we go. With the big man known as Tyler Bowe.
He's
a great comedian. Awesome. He is celebrated. Check out his two comedy specials. Wait for it and Upgraded.
I liked it. I liked it a lot.
All right.
The rhyme with the name. Jeez.
There could be a career here.
You know, this whole podcast was just a setup for me to do a freestyle.
That was really good. Yeah. I love freestyle stuff. I hate doing it.
Yeah. Well, that's.
But I should practice. That's it. Right?
I would actually
do it more.
Freestyle with my friends quite a bit.
Oh, really?
And we would always.
It shows.
We would always want.
The excuse to.
We would always want a beat, like we would pull up something on Spotify, like. Freestyle beat, but to have a beat like an actual beatboxer that could switch it up would be pretty awesome.
That was really good.
Or we used to be, you know, beating on tables with like, you know, pencils and all that, doing the table beats.
There was always some kid in the class doing something with a Sharpie
making a little show.
Man,
I don't know.
Yeah, teachers love that.
Well, we're getting close to the end of our time slot here.
All right.
But I want to do something fun to close it out.
Mm.
You talk about energy drinks in your special.
Yeah.
Are they a big part of your life? Do you still drink them?
Like in my 20s and stuff, I was drinking definitely a lot more energy drinks. Red Bull, Monster, those 5-hour energy shots. And you're just like, this can't be good.
Yeah,
like long term.
No,
yeah.
Or at that level of consumption.
Yeah, for sure. That's always in the back of my mind too.
They also started like when Red Bull first came out, it was little, little, and then they just started making the cans bigger and bigger, and then they have like the Monster with like the big, it's like a jug with the big screw cap on the top, and it looks like it's like a carafe.
Yes.
Yeah, those are insane.
Please tell me that there's not some kid drinking that whole thing in one shot.
Well, you know there is.
Kill
you. Yeah. They're going to drink everything that's available to them, especially as teenagers.
They used to market them towards like extreme athletes, right?
Which
like,
they're never having that.
Now it's, I feel like they shifted. They're like, oh, gamers. That's who's drinking that's these. It's kids, guys that are playing Fortnite for 20 hours at a pop or Call of Duty for 2 days straight.
Yeah, gamer fuel. Well, speaking of that, so we got some, I want to get your opinion on these energy drinks that we got here, ranking them.
Okay.
Here we go.
All right. We got a classic Monster on the screen here.
That was my first, Red Bull's the OG. I think most people, that was the gateway. That was the entry level. Monster was my second. I've kind of gone through eras. Monster was my second era. Very, very sweet, almost syrupy.
Yeah, it's thick, right? It's thicker than a liquid maybe should be.
I don't know how you would describe the flavor on the Monster, but I shifted to the blue one. That was the sugar-free.
Yes, yes.
Definitely lighter, not as sweet. So I went... very quickly from the green can to the blue can, but Monster, I reached out to them at one point. I reached out to a bunch of energy companies and I was like, hey, I'm a touring comic. It's long drives. It's late nights. I am your customer and I am in front of your customer on a nightly basis.
Yeah.
I was like, let's do a sponsorship, wrap my car. You know what I mean? Well, 'cause I was working on the road a lot more like in my 20s and early 30s. I'm like, give me a Monster car wrap. Sponsor me, like, you know.
No way. And did it go anywhere?
I heard back. I didn't hear back from Red Bull. Actually, the folks at Monster, they were like, hey, we're, you know, because they were sponsoring like rock bands and stuff like that. I'm come on. Why not comedy? Yeah. You know, the Monster Energy Comedy Tour. I'll drink it. I'll have a can on stage. I'm already drinking it.
Yeah.
You know, but they sent me a bunch of swag. They were like, sorry, you know, this is not a direction that we're interested in going, but they sent me like a bunch of like bumpers, like stickers and like a case of Monster and a hat and like a keychain thing. Yeah. Like they sent me a bunch of swag.
That's respectable.
I appreciated the response. So shout out to Monster for getting back to me.
Okay, let's see this next one.
Rockstar. So my go-to is actually the white can, the sugar-free Rockstar.
Oh.
I realized after drinking it for a long time, the flavor, bubblegum. For the longest time I was drinking, I'm going, what is the flavor on the, and then it struck me. I was like, this is like bubblegum, old school.
Wow. That's like stick or the
like a pink stick of, like that came in a pack of baseball cards with a white powder on it.
Yeah.
Yeah, like a Hubba Bubba.
Yeah. Man. For a while, this is what drives me crazy too about companies. For a while, they did different flavors, but sometimes they'll like they had a peach flavored Rockstar at one point that was really nice. It was not too sweet. I could only find it at gas stations. Couldn't find it at like grocery stores.
Yeah, yeah.
And then it started disappearing. And I remember the last time I went to this one gas station and I bought like the last three cans they had or the last four cans because I was like, it's gone. It's disappearing. So Rockstar, if you're out there, if you're listening, bring back the peach or just send me a case. It was fantastic.
I love the peach flavor. 5-hour energy.
Those suckers work. I mean, the flavor, who cares? It's a shot. At that point, they know you're just slamming it.
Yeah.
That says berry. Okay, sure.
it's not berry.
It just tastes like batteries, kind of.
Yeah, yeah.
Little Flintstone vitamin mixed with the battery, maybe. Yeah.
Oh, man, I really did. Like, I do a joke about – I really did take two one time, and I didn't wait. That was the problem. I took one, and I thought, all right. And I remember I was on a Tribble gig, and I was David Tribble used to book these gigs, and it was like 300-400 miles in between shows. And sometimes the gigs were great. Sometimes they were not. But, I took one. I waited like 10 or 15 minutes. And then I thought, oh, man, this isn't really doing anything. And I took another one. And then it all came rushing in at one point.
That's a little scary.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wonder if you bought like a whole pack of them, like say 12. Or is there a cap? Like they're not legally not allowed to sell you over 30 hours of energy. Because if someone's buying that much energy, you gotta wonder what they're gonna get up to.
What are you gonna be doing?
I don't even know what the caffeine level is on there, but I think a lot of it is the like the B vitamins and stuff like that. Because you get that or the niacin that you get that like niacin flush where your skin like you get like
I don't
like
know about
hot
this.
And flushed and your heart's racing. It's
Red Bull. Where's Red Bull?
It's the classic.
That's the classic. Zero sugar Red Bull. That's my favorite.
Yeah,
that's my
I've gone zero sugar across the board, and I feel like it's hypocritical to say like, oh, it's the sugar that's bad, because there's all kinds of synthetic chemicals in there and fake sweeteners and stuff like that, which
it's
is not good
for you. It's still not good for you.
But I do feel like I don't need the sugar calorie wise, and it just I feel like the sugar makes me extra jittery. So, but yeah, sugar free Red Bull. It's OG. It's classic, and a lot of places it's everywhere. They've got distribution, like a lot of comedy club.
I think
green
it's
rooms.
I think it's the coolest drink. I think it's the most respectable energy drink to be seen. Drinking, people won't judge you for a Red Bull as much as a Monster. Per se.
I do. Also, like at this point in my life, I feel like if I have a coffee in my hand, like no one bats an eye. But I do feel like if I'm walking around, if I have the big Monster jug, like
with the canister.
Like, yeah, I mean, I judge myself. I'm like, I shouldn't be drinking this.
What am I doing?
Yeah,
where's my life going?
Okay, next up.
Lightning Bolt. Is that Steven Seagal?
Steven.
Okay, we've got on the Seagal's. Screen Steven Seagal's limited edition energy drink, Lightning Bolt. It's got some sort of Japanese character on it.
Got his little face in the corner. That's great.
Yeah. Oh, man. I think people have a lot of different feelings about Steven Seagal. He's an odd dude. I don't know what's in there. I feel like if he put his face on that can and is backing it, there could be some... Like, it's got the essence of Seagal in there. Like, the sweat, like, running out of
there's
his
a little bit of sweat in every
his soul. His soul. He split his soul like a Horcrux into all these cans of energy drinks.
Yeah. They take a little bit of his, like, one hair from his ponytail in each can. It's just like.
And then you put it in, it just smokes and disappears. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Lightning Bolt.
Who's your dad? This is real.
This is Who's Your Daddy energy drink.
Oh,
the
man.
King of energy.
The market's gotten so...
What does it say below Who's Your Daddy? Oh, energy drink. Okay.
Who's Your Daddy?
I don't know what the story is of this. If you're seeing this in the comments, let us know if you know the backstory of Who's Your Daddy energy drink.
Yeah.
We are looking for the father of Who's Your Daddy.
Yeah, that can either be a very sad, honest question... Or it's trying to be like a little kinky. I don't know.
Oh, no.
It should be, hopefully Maury Povich drinks this. Or has his guest drink it.
Ironically, drinking too much of that will render you sterile.
Yeah.
Exactly.
You will not be fathering any children if you drink that.
I'm definitely not the daddy.
Okay. Okay.
Crunk juice.
Crunk.
I've seen that. Which is weird because crunk is like a portmanteau, a combination of two words. I hope that wasn't condescending for anybody because I've used that word before and people look at me crazy. Like, what?
I needed to know.
A portmanteau. It's a portmanteau of crazy drunk.
Oh.
The word
crunk.
Oh, let's go out tonight. Let's get crunk. Crazy drunk. So that is a weird thing to put on a non-alcoholic beverage, unless it is alcoholic. Maybe it's like an alcoholic energy drink.
I think these are all straight up energy drinks.
Yeah.
What I love is the 3 exclamation points after crunk. It really drives the message home.
Crazy drunk! There is one that's just called cocaine. I've seen it.
I'm going to...
The energy drink is called cocaine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
I think I've heard of that.
And
too.
You're like, well, that seems irresponsible and false advertising, hopefully.
Yeah.
Unless they're just like, it's actually cocaine.
Was that one of the Coke brothers who made the original Coca-Cola split off and made the cocaine energy drink?
No idea.
But. Hopefully.
Okay, and I think this is the last one we got here.
Blood?
What?
Blood energy potion.
And that's not even that it comes in a bag like that, huh?
Yeah, so yeah, what we're looking at is it looks like a blood bag, but it's called Blood Energy Potion. Micah, could you zoom in and maybe on the
this is an actual product
for drinking. Yeah.
That's a great sign when on a beverage it's they have to clarify that it's for drinking.
This is potable. that's a little much. It's a little morbid. I wouldn't partake of that.
It seems like maybe a Halloween thing.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, it'd be fun. Unless they're marketing it to like hemophiliacs or people that are like, hey, are you a quart low? And maybe you need a pick me up.
Are you a quart low?
And that's why they had to add the for drinking messages, because people were injecting it directly into their bloodstream.
I mean, I got to admit, like, I donate blood regularly at Red Cross. Like, that's a thing I try to do. I think it's a good thing. And this is just, it's like, it's too accurate. It's too accurate.
The color and
The blood bag and like even the little
smudges
And the scan code on it. They put those like the barcode to scan.
Rumor has it they actually like at Red Cross they actually had these stocked for a while and just people kept getting it mixed up. And
they
drinking the regular blood bags. Yeah,
that would be. Can you imagine that? Vampires. Someone comes in after a car accident. They need like 5 units, and they accidentally give them 5 bags of crunk juice, and they're just like bouncing off the wall.
That's great.
Their blood pressure's still low, but they're very energetic.
We don't know how much longer they will be energetic, but they are for now.
I think I'm gonna create one and call it Portmanteau.
Yeah,
I mean that's seems like a cool drink.
There you go. Sounds like a champagne.
It does sound like a champagne, though. This is a Portmanteau. And just,
but why not caffeinate it? And
throw some caffeine. Yeah. Portmanteau. Little up and down at the same time.
Portmanteau combination of two things, right?
Yeah.
Energy drink, champagne.
Yeah, there's actually like an alcoholic drink called port.
Yeah, and yeah. You could, just the port.
Perfect.
Yeah. So there you go.
Wow.
There you go. We created it.
You using that? I'll use it.
You can have it.
All right, I'll take it.
Yeah.
Well, great. That's the end of our energy drink segment. The getting to a close of our podcast. Is there anything you want to say to the Dry Bar fans before we get out of here?
Which camera? Where am I, talking to? Right here. Dry Bar fans, sincerely, thank you. This audience, this Dry Bar audience, has been the most widespread across the I do gigs sometimes and I'll go to a place and I'll go, I don't know if I haven't been here before. It's my first time working in this little place. I don't know if I have any fans here yet or whatever. And sure enough, someone will show up or a group of people will show up and they're like, we saw you on Dry Bar. That's why we came out. And it's so cool to go around and have people come out and go, we saw you. We loved your first special or whatever. And that's why we're here. And so I feel like the Dry Bar crowd,
they're the best.
Go to tylerbow.com or hit up my socials, Facebook or Instagram, just at Tylerbow. That's the best place to find out where I'm going to be.
Sweet. Well, thanks Tyler for coming on the podcast, and thank you Steve for filling in as the guest host.
Thank you for having me. Sorry I murdered Jordan.
It's all right.
Thank
we'll get
you
him back. Bring him back
for having me on and for busting out that dope freestyle.
That was amazing. Yeah.
Wow. It's probably going to go viral.
That's nice.
I'm already feeling it.
Do you have a SoundCloud or?
I'm working on it.
All right.
I'm working up the confidence. Yeah, this will help.
Oh, all right.
But thank you guys for tuning in. Check out drybarcomedy.com for upcoming specials. And, you know, as always, the podcast when it's coming out. Leave a review. And we will see you next week. Goodbye, folks.